You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in. Before we get any further into this episode, I've got some information to share. Hey, y'all, just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. Look, it's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And when the pie doesn't get any bigger, but the people wanting a piece of it do, you've got to figure out a competitive advantage. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. It's everything you need from soup to nuts, cradle to grave, point A to point B, whatever point B is. Each of you has different goals. So maybe you're a new to the career realtor, or you're a super experienced pro who can't figure out that next level. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. It's designed for you before I even met you. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now back to this amazing content. All right, great. Well, I'm very glad to have you on the show. I mean, you're kind of famous in real estate, you know, Mr. Defeaty.
Really? Not as famous as you.
See, it all depends on which crowds you run in, right? So your crowd sees you in a different light than my crowd sees me, because that's how real estate goes. We're so True. Big that we're actually really small.
Yeah.
But True. I'm just going to say again out loud that I'm going to rhyme Defeaty with Shirley Feeney from Laverne and Shirley for the rest of the time that I know you
Great.
In this space forever. And you know what? That's also going to delineate all the young people who listen to my podcast, because they don't have the foggiest idea who Shirley Feeney is.
No. My wife, my wife's 15 years younger than me, and the references I make, she doesn't know who Jack Tripper is. She doesn't know who Shirley Feeney is. She doesn't.
Oh, my gosh. You know. Three's Company could probably come back now. It would still be politically correct, although it would probably be politically incorrect.
I don't think any of the shows we were accustomed to can survive. Can you imagine Sanford and Son?
That was the best show ever. Red Fox is a freaking genius, and he would never survive in cancel culture.
No. And the Jeffersons?
Oh, my gosh. Right?
Yeah.
The first upwardly mobile black family we saw on TV, and they wouldn't survive cancel culture.
Leave It to Beaver wouldn't survive right now because it would be racist.
You know, but there's lots of reasons that show shouldn't have survived. That show was terrible. I never understood that, but I guess I'm too young to get it.
It was a horrible show. I was born on the cusp of it going out, but I remember some of those shows, but she doesn't relate to a lot of the references I make.
But you're officially Gen X, right?
I don't know what I am. I was born in 68. So where are you down? You're in South Carolina or North Carolina?
I'm in North Carolina, but I am licensed in South Carolina. But, you know, Charlotte sits on the state line, so we do a lot of relocation people who examine the whole little circle. But I don't go a whole long way into South Carolina because I don't know it that well.
I was just down there, when I say just before COVID hit, for a wedding. My niece and my brother lived down in North Carolina.
Oh.
He's a military guy. I think he's in Fayetteville.
So he's Army then. That's Fort Bragg.
Yeah, he's Fort Bragg. I fell in love with this little town down there. I think it was called... Was it Clayton?
There's Clinton, and then there is Clayton. There's Clayton and Clinton, so you could have been anywhere. There's also Kinston. I mean, you could have been a lot of places.
It was Clayton, I believe. It's a beautiful little town, and I walked around it. It was just outside of, oh, God, I can't remember offhand where it was, but it was a metropolis over there. There's an area.
Clayton's outside of Raleigh.
Yeah, that was it. But it was a cool little town. I loved it. I walked around, and it was something like a throwback to the 50s.
And that's not a bad thing.
Oh, no, that's a great thing. I wish Northern Jersey would be like that, but I'm in New Jersey, you know.
I know, but your people all come here, then they bring that New Jersey mindset, and we have to say, y'all got to slow it down a little bit.
Yeah, New Jersey mindset is a little rough sometimes, you know.
But they're lovely. You know, the people from Morristown, New Jersey, they land in South Charlotte. There's a specific zip code they all land in. It's hilarious.
Yeah, see, I don't want that. If I was to move down there, I'd want to stay away from them.
Well, we can do that. So when you get enough of the taxes in New Jersey and you're ready to come south, we'll park you in a really cool town where you'll just be waving at people for no reason at all.
I watched some of your videos and I subscribe to your podcast, by the way.
Good job.
I love that you're able to. Are we live yet?
I'm recording because I figured the good moments will show up when they show up.
I love how you're not afraid to interject your political opinions. And you know what? That's a breath of fresh air. Because if you do that up here, you know, they start boycotting your office.
And isn't that a shame? I mean, as long as you're not ugly about it, we were never all meant to be the same. And there's a New York Times article out today. And by the way, friends, we're recording this in March of 2021. And it's talking about realtors putting political beliefs out there, but it's very skewed the way they wrote it. One side gets attacked for having political beliefs and the other side gets celebrated. And that's what has to stop, frankly, because none of us have a corner on the market of perfection and perfect ideas.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think even the NRA started getting involved. They have some kind of policy now. They consider it hate speech if you say, you know, okay, I love this Republican or I love this conservative, or, you know, conservatism has become a bad word, you know?
Which is a shame because the conservatives I know are fiscal conservatives primarily, and we just like small government. We're not in favor of big government.
Yeah, and my beliefs tend to lean towards more conservative values. I'm not aligned with any party, but I am more conservative than anything else, and people can't seem to separate that from a Republican or a Democrat or, you know, whatever they want to call it. You know, I grew up in an area, let's see if I can pronounce it right for you, Newark.
That's the gross airport.
Yeah, Newark. So my family was there for my great-grandfather immigrated from Italy. He came here.
Oh. And
at that time, when he came here, at that time, nobody would give him a job. So, of course, he was Italian. And at that time, what he did was he was able to scrounge up enough money, buy a house, a multifamily house where several generations of my family grew up in. He started a garden and started selling fruits and vegetables. So now think about that. You got to wait for those fruits and vegetables to grow. It must have been a rough couple of months.
But you know what? Back then they knew how to preserve and can and dry things so they would figure out a plan for survival throughout the year. And I guarantee he knew the plan.
He must have. And it's funny because the patch of land he bought today is probably the most contaminated place on earth today. It's by the Newark Airport. And that's where he was growing his fruits and vegetables. And my family was down in that area of Newark. It's always been a very heavy Democratic stronghold. I think 80 to about 100 years of my family was there, close to 100 years. And then everybody kind of left in the mid-70s, late-70s and kind of dispersed. That's when the Italian population, they kind of grew out and you had different cultures coming in. You know, I always sat down and talked to my grandmother about it. And she would tell me how that particular part of Newark and the downtown area was like Times Square, New York at one time. And you've seen like the degradation of the city go on. You've seen the politics go up. And then the riots happened in the 60s, which basically burnt out all around us where we were. And it still has not gotten any better, you know, and where I am now, I am literally 3 miles from Newark. I'm in a town called Nutley, New Jersey, which we're 12 miles from New York City. So my market is really New York City. But a lot of people don't know about this town because it's only 3 square miles. Our most famous person, I think, is Martha Stewart. She came from this town. Well, we have a couple. Then we have Robert Blake, which nobody talks about anymore. And we all know why, but I remember him as Beretta as a kid. But he grew up in Nutley. Annie Oakley is a big thing in this town because this is where Annie Oakley lived.
Really?
Yeah.
In New Jersey?
Yeah, right here in Nutley, New Jersey. Yeah.
Who knew?
Her and Wild Bill Hickok, they had this circus right down the road from me here, which is a campus now, the former Hoffman LaRoche Medical Complex. So it's a rather a quaint little town. And back in the day, the early part of the 20th century, a lot of wealthy people from New York City, we used to have a direct rail line to New York City. They would build homes here and they would send their family off in the summer times to go vacation, to get rid of them, basically. So that's how the town kind of grew. And that rail line is no longer in operation because I guess probably about 50, 60 years ago, a group of the powers that be decided they didn't want city folk here. So they got rid of the railroad.
Well, that's one way to do it.
They did it. Now they're regretting that. You know, because we have a beautiful town called Montclair right next to us and they have a direct rail line and their property price points are a lot bigger than ours just because of that.
Okay. I want to hear more about this multifamily that your great grandparents bought because I'm fascinated by
Of course, on my podcast, we talk about a lot of the crazy scenarios, but there's this generational picture that you're painting of got here, got through Ellis Island, which we have to remember that's where people have their health checked. You had to have a sponsor. You had to have somewhere to go. You had to have a plan when you got to Ellis Island. And when you came through or any of the immigration ports at that time, they had to make it happen and with nothing in their pockets and learn the language, figured out how to make it happen. So he scratches up enough money to buy multifamily. Did you ever see the property? Have you been in it?
You know, it's funny. It was 110 Elm Street in Newark, New Jersey. When I was born, my parents and my grandmother were living at 106 Elm Street across the street. So my grandmother, she passed away when she was 78. She never left that block. She grew up on 110 Elm Street. She moved to 106 Elm Street. And the funny thing about it is she never owned a home. She rented the same house from a landlord for 70-something odd years.
Why is that? Do you think didn't it occur to her?
I think the mentality was, well, I grew up being, I was taught to be very leery of people with money. I was taught to be very leery of law enforcement. I was taught to, anybody that had money was no good and they got it in ill ways. That's what I was told. So around me, a lot of the people, you know, they considered working down the port, loading trucks, hitting it big. Or if you were a local, let's say, I don't know, a local criminal, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, you were admired. So it was a different environment. And I'm an art school graduate. I have a design degree. I was an art director for 29 years before I really opened up this office. I kind of went to a totally different route because all my family were into, you know, they were longshoremen, they were truck drivers, they were. And I said to myself a long time ago, I said, I'm not doing this crap. Right. I'm not doing this. I'm not loading trucks and breaking my back. No way. You know? So I decided to go to art school, which everybody looked at me like, you went to art school. What are you going to do with this? You know, but I knew what I wanted to do ever since I was a little kid. So I found a way to go to art school. I started working in the industry at a very young age, 16 years old. I got an apprenticeship and I was working on magazine publications like National Lampoon, Women's Wear Daily. There were a couple of those. Yeah, I was working in the fashion magazine industry. And then I started to go to college in New York. I went to School of Visual Arts. And then I went to Newark School of Fine Industrial Arts and graduated with a major in illustration and minor in design and photography. And I kind of lucked out because I started to learn. When I got outside my household, I started to get a different mindset. And there's a point in your life where you start to outgrow your parents. Because not that they were bad, but they were blue collar and they kind of stayed at that level and that was it. They didn't kind of go any further. They did what they had to do to make ends meet. So I decided, number one, I wasn't going to be a physical laborer. I ain't doing that. I liked what the art world had taught me and I met a lot of people and I had some great mentors that kind of moved me along. And then I think in the early 90s, I also was lucky. I got involved with a small company called About.com and I was the art director there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they wound up getting acquired by, well, the part that I worked in got acquired by a small company named Google, which, yeah, kind of spun me off. So, you know, I fast forward and I was working in the design field as an art director and I kind of got put into financial markets and pharmaceutical. So I was working for Roche, Merck, J&J, WebMD. I did a couple of stints with Merck. And worked on a lot of their product lines. And I kind of grew from there. So now, as that was going on, I started acquiring properties. And at the house I just bought, I started buying properties in 96. And people laugh at me. My first loan, my interest rate was 17%.
So we had. We were still glad to get it because the money was available.
Right. And I wound up, I was an investor for a couple of years. I bought a couple of multifamily properties. Now, granted, nobody in my family ever bought a house. My mother, my father, my grandmother, actually, my parents never graduated high school. My mother was sick as a kid. She had to drop out of high school. My father lied and signed his paperwork to get drafted. Well, he joined the Navy at 17 and got shipped to Vietnam. You know, my grandmother told me he lied to me. He signed the paperwork and forged my name. And next thing you know, he was off on a ship, 17 years old. And they had kids young. I mean, I was born. My mother was 20, 19 maybe. somewhere around there. I had an older brother. Think about that. So she was like 16, 17 when she had her first child. My father was 21 with already two kids. So I got into the investing side of things around early 2000. I was working with realtors. And the reason I opened up this office is because I didn't like the way realtors were working.
Talk to me about that. What made you hesitant? Was it your background of not trusting people, or was it their behavior that exacerbated that?
I think it was their behavior, because I was always taught the one thing, you know, my parents maybe have not, they were never formally educated, but the one thing that my parents instilled in me was when you're going to do something and you say you're going to do it, do it. That's it. That's business 101. Say what you're going to do, when you're going to do it.
That's Life 101, listeners. Yeah. Life 101, hello.
Yeah, and I never got involved with any of the bad stuff a lot of my friends did. My father was pretty direct. He goes, if I catch you doing drugs or drinking, I'm just going to kill you. So that was it. Now, he's been gone for a while now, and I still feel that way. I still don't get involved in any of that stuff. I'm in my 50s, and I don't touch it. Because I think that when you get involved in that nonsense, you lose control of yourself. And you could spiral out. I was lucky enough to have a lot of good mentors. I wound up going to a small high school in Harrison, New Jersey, because my parents didn't want me going to high school in Newark, New Jersey. And we moved to Harrison, and that was the big time for us. Harrison is a 1 square mile town that basically probably every inch of the ground is contaminated because it used to be all factories and everything. So I wound up getting a great education, and they kind of kicked off my career because I wasn't a good student. I was probably at the best a D-minus student. So I think freshman and sophomore year, I was horrendous. My grades were horrendous. But I had one of my guidance counselors that came to me and said, hey, listen, we know you're not going to college. We got to find something for you to do. So they put me in this vocational training program where I took Commercial Art 1 and Commercial Art 2. They helped me find a job while I was still in high school. And then it went up from there. And it kind of dragged up all my grades. So I found what I like to do. I got involved in that and real estate. I was working with realtors buying about 2-3 homes a year when I started investing in 96. And they were just, you know, I still say it today. A majority of realtors are very lazy.
I'm not going to argue with you.
They want to hit the easy button. And like I turned off all my showing time requests. And I don't accept text messaging for appointments.
Oh, really? Tell me about that. Is that to force people to call you?
Right. Because I notice, and I call it the Instagram agents, because they think you take a picture on Instagram, you put it up there, and everybody's supposed to beat down your door and sell billions of dollars of real estate. We know a lot of them don't sell shit. You know, basically that's what it is. So I force them to call me. Because if they call me, they have spoken to me. And if they have spoken to me, now they have a connection with me. And if they don't show up at my appointment, now they're going to have a problem with me because I call them out. I will call them up and say, hey, you had an appointment at 3 o'clock. You didn't show up. What was the problem? You know, with the showing time, number one, they're owned by Zillow. So I got rid of that. But the other thing is they just click a button. And if you don't answer showing time, it calls you like a bill collector every minute and it doesn't stop. You know, it'll ring your phone up all night.
I'm going to have to put that on video. You're going to have to say that again. They call you like a bill collector all night. Say that again.
If you don't answer showing time, they call you like a bill collector. That's it.
Oh, my gosh. It gets so
damn annoying.
It annoys our clients, too. And I think that as realtors, we forget that there's somebody else getting annoyed when we're getting annoyed.
Right.
So what do we do about it? And you've taken steps. You take action.
Yeah. And the other thing is I have some co-op complexes I work with where I really have to speak to the agent and explain to them what the criteria is, you know, because they don't want to hear it. A lot of agents these days are just so happy to have a client and they're just so happy to have a buyer. They just buy a lead. They go, they set up the appointment. And then what winds up happening is I always ask, has your client driven by the property? Well, I guarantee you 99% of the time they say no. And then they set up the appointment with me. I set it up with the owner. And then the client drives by it. And then they cancel it because they don't like the tree or the power lines near it.
Okay, so I got to rabbit hole you on this because there's a lot of conversation in the New York metro area about the co-ops and about what they can and can't say no to. Are you seeing that in New Jersey as well as what's happening in the boroughs?
New Jersey co-ops are not as popular as they are in New York. Like New York, everything's basically a co-op. New Jersey, we only have a couple complexes, like the towns like a Fort Lee that border New York. They have co-ops. And I have one particular complex that has 432 units in it. You know, they don't even abide by the other co-ops criteria.
Because they like controlling their own universe.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's good and it's bad. You know, because like the one complex, you have to make a certain amount of money. Your credit score has to be a certain amount. But I have people that call me up all the time and say, well, it's a cash buyer. It doesn't matter. You still have to meet this criteria. The good thing about it is you get the vet who lives in the complex. Every once in a while, somebody will sneak in that doesn't belong there. Like you can't have a criminal record and you can't have an eviction record. You know?
Yeah, but you saw what's being proposed in the boroughs, right?
No, I don't know. No, no. What's being proposed?
It's coming from the far, far, far extreme, and they don't even want you to run sex offender checks.
Wow.
You won't have the control over saying no to somebody if they have a background.
It has to end at some point, because where are we going down? Are we going down? I'm having a big problem right now with my clients that own multifamily buildings because of the whole, you know, moratorium on evictions, because some tenants have the money to pay their rent and they're just not doing it. You know?
Well, they were deadbeats before the pandemic, and they're deadbeats now.
Right.
And I'm not saying that to be ugly, but y'all should know that in the world, there are people that do not pay the bills and won't pay the bills. That's just reality.
Yeah, it happens. I got a lot of multifamily people right now that are crying because they're not getting a break on their mortgage, but they have to pay it. And the tenants are like, listen, you can't throw me out. You know, it is what it is. I said this a while ago, and I still believe this is true, and I hope it doesn't happen, but I think I'll give it 20 to 30 years. At some point, New Jersey, let's say New Jersey, is going to own all the real estate, and you're just going to rent it back from the state.
And that means anybody that can get out will get out, so the people that are left behind either don't have the resources to get out, or they enjoy having their thumb on somebody else.
Yeah, because a couple of people have proposed it. Why doesn't New Jersey buy blocks of real estate and just be the landlord?
What? Yeah. So what happened to the mindset of people that they've forgotten how rewarding it is to work for something and get it? Like your great-grandfather, he worked for that multiplex and he got it. And then he was able to provide housing and for his family for a long time.
Right.
And he also had that personal reward of, I made this happen. What's happened to our society that people don't feel like they have to work for it? You mentioned the Instagram society. Let me post it. I should be rewarded for taking a picture instead of doing the daily hard work of rolling your sleeves up.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, since I met you on the Realty Executive Conference, that's how we connected, by the way.
Because I couldn't remember when we met.
It was Realty. It's okay. I know, because I know how much you put into your production and I've seen it. And I go, wow, man, that's a lot. She does a lot to make this thing on point. But, you know, it's rewarding because I've seen some of the people that you're interviewing and the people you connect with. And I know you ran for Congress too, right?
I did in 2019.
Man, that must have been a lot of work.
It was. I had to put my real estate business on hold to do it the right way, which is leather on the streets, door knocking, saying hello to people, being out there everywhere. And it's so hard. It was so rewarding. I met the best people. And I think if I'd had a longer runway, I would have made it. But it was a short runway in a special election. I still don't regret having given it a go and given it everything I had. But just because I failed doesn't mean I won't try again.
Well, that was my next question. Are you going to do it again?
I don't know. I mean, I've got to figure out where I belong. And isn't that part of the journey of life? And it's where real estate's interesting, right? So I keep my head, all I can see is your great-grandfather making the journey here and then deciding to make a space of his own and make our country better. The immigrant that built our country is your great-granddad, because he didn't come here expecting anything except an opportunity.
Yeah.
I look at real estate that way. If we protect the profession, it's the one last place on earth where people can actually just work their tails off and make it happen. I don't know of any other profession where you can do that without degrees, without silver spoons, without tons of money, because really it's hard work that makes the best people successful. And I look at that and I just ask myself, why don't people see that if they would just persist one more day and make one more phone call and do one more hard thing, and then you get hiccuped. Okay, fine. Pick up and do it again. I love our business for that. And so I look at it and say, if I don't put myself out there to go make our business better and go protect our business and be the elected official, one day maybe it happens, I don't know, then who's going to do it? Which is why I wind up in this quandary all the time of what should I do with my life, which is also a medium age thing. The opportunity we have, right? I mean,
yeah.
You and I are at the medium age. And so we're looking at, we've got a couple of decades left of actual full potential before things start to scale down and you start to realize that some certain people being pushed into high elected offices, it's kind of elder abuse. It is elder abuse, but we have a couple of decades left of really being able to contribute. So what do we do with that? And then I look at people like your wife. She's 15 years younger than you. She's got more time than we do to have this scalable impact.
Oh yeah.
So does her whole generation. If they would put in what our great grandparents put in, oh my gosh, what kind of return?
Well, you know, think about our lifestyle. I mean, imagine if my great grandparents had this little device.
My great grandparents wouldn't have wanted it.
Probably not. You know, I listen to some of the stories and I listen like my other grandparent, my great grandparents from my other side, my mother's side, my great grandmother had 21 kids.
Oh my God.
And 18 survived. Right?
Oh, it's
she lost several during birth.
Well, and as a mother or even as a dad, I mean, you look at that and you say the sheer amount of willpower it takes to get past that grief to go have another kid is a monument in and of itself. And
right.
We downplay that because we're in a society right now that doesn't even value our children like it should.
Right. I mean, 21 kids, 18 survived, and he was a barber. And they weren't born in a hospital. They were born
at
with
home.
A midwife, and it cost $1 a birth. Can you imagine?
No, I cannot imagine. I am way too bougie for that. Nope, can't.
And, you know, it's funny. They were all dispersed around the Nutley, Belleville, and Newark area. So, you know, I'm related to probably
everybody.
It was interesting because they were all poor, like poor.
They see themselves as poor, though?
No, I talked to my uncle who now is in his 80s and he only had a sixth grade education. He dropped out. He wound up getting involved with politics. He became a sheriff. He did well for himself. He retired down in Florida, but he said he would give every penny and every nickel to go back to that. You know, because he sees it as, he goes, we didn't realize we were poor. We just thought that was the way it is. You know, he goes, we saw other people that were rich and we wanted to be like them, you know. But, you know, the difference is if they wanted to be like them, they would take the steps to be like them. Today, everybody wants to skip. They want to skip. They want to do a YouTube video. They want to be a rap star. They want all this money.
Be an influencer.
They want to be an influencer and get paid millions. They want to be a Kardashian. Doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. No.
And you know what? Shorten that sentence. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And I know several people that are very successful on the outside. They look one way to other people. But if you know them on the inside, they're working 70 hours a week.
Right.
You know, they're putting the work in. They're putting the effort in. They're putting the time in to do the things. And, you know, it's not only, it's any business. This business, I always say the bar is so low to get in. The entry level is so low. You know, that's why it's the, you know, how many? 75, 74, only 13% survive. The rest are going to, you know.
13% survive outside of the first 2 years.
Yeah. So I think we're in this market now, and I've seen this before. I remember in the early 2000s when everybody was getting their real estate license and everybody was becoming a mortgage broker. It's happening again. I don't think we're going to run into a crash like we did last time. I think things are going to de-escalate incrementally and it'll be okay. Let's face it. The last 2 years has been a nightmare. I mean, we had COVID. We had this polarizing election and
polarizing everything. I mean,
still going on.
Fight over masks. It's the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah. The whole mask debate. Now it's the vaccine debate. Now it's vaccine shaming. Now it's like, you know what? I feel bad. Like my daughter is 17 years old. Her last 2 years in high school has been a nightmare for her.
Thank you for saying that, because you and I, we lose a year of our life. It sucks. No big deal. But our kids, my daughter's 16 and a half, they've lost these tiny, tiny slivers of life that are life changing, because that's when you find out who you are. That's when you grow past your parents and you're trying on personalities and developmentally. Yeah. They're just stunted because they got put in our pockets and our kids aren't supposed to be in our pockets.
Right. I mean,
I was supposed to get in trouble.
I was working in the city when I was 16, and that was 1986 when New York City was not the Rudy Giuliani city. It was the Koch city.
Oh, was that not Dinkins? That was right after Dinkins, right?
I was on the end of Koch, early Dinkins, and 42nd Street was 42nd Street, like something from, what was that movie with Robert De Niro? Taxi Driver. That's what it looked like.
So what were you doing at 16 then, at the city at that time?
Well, my parents didn't know it, but I was working as a courier for a graphics company. So that was my apprenticeship. So even my guidance counselor said, hey, listen, I don't know if you want to tell anybody, but you're going to be going to New York every day. I'm like, I don't care. I want to make money.
Right.
And that's what I was doing. So I learned all about New York. I remember walking into the city because I was never on 42nd Street before. So I'm walking down. All I see are drug addicts, the hookers. I go, what am I doing here? And as I'm walking, I'm looking around. I bump into this gentleman who was a pimp. And he just turned around and hauled off and cracked me right in the chest. And was like, welcome to New York. And there I am standing on 42nd Street, like, what just happened here, you know? And that was my welcome to New York City.
So were you just walking in the wrong place? Is that why you got punched?
Yeah, I was walking in the wrong place. Definitely the wrong place. But I'm a 16-year-old kid, you know?
So I got to ask you, how, after all of those pieces of life, how did you land in real estate? Just because you were buying investment properties and wanted to be the better version of what you'd discovered?
Yeah, that's the umbrella idea. I've always enjoyed my industry, marketing, design, creative. You know, I subconsciously am right back where I was before. I'm doing all the creative, all the art, all the design work and everything, but it's just real estate. Now I sell real estate. And that's kind of how I've grown my business. And we opened up about 7 years ago. I was working at JP Morgan. I was a designer in the digital marketing department in New York on Park Avenue. Making a very, very good salary. I just got so tired of the bureaucracy of corporate America. And I kind of felt I was in a wrong spot because that was right up off the heels of the whole Bernie Madoff scandal. And I was onboarding my position when they were rolling off of that. And I remember they got fined, I believe it was $18 billion by the federal government. And they didn't bat an eye. And I said to myself, something's up here.
Right.
And this was the kicker. So I'm a big history buff. I walked into, they took over Bear Stearns. So I wanted to go to that cafeteria today because they had better chefs at that one than the one at JP Morgan. Because we were spoiled when it came to that.
Chefs in a cafeteria.
Oh, yeah. So I walk into the Bear Stearns lobby and there was a glass case sitting there. In the middle of the lobby where people were just walking by, ignoring it, laying their coffee cup on it, whatever they were doing. So I walk up to it and I look at it and I start reading the inscriptions. And there was two dueling pistols that were sitting there. And I read the inscriptions and it said, these are the dueling pistols that Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton used in
Weehawken. No way.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there and I got chills when I read it. And I go, you got to be kidding me. Now, remember,
it was still in existence. I figured they were lost to history.
Remember, Alexander Hamilton started the Bank of New York.
Right.
The Bank of New York became Chase. Chase bought J.P. Morgan. Not the other way around. So, you know, I was excited to work for a company like J.P. Morgan because they have a lot of history in this country. And they did actually save this country several times. I didn't like the idea of the whole Federal Reserve establishment that they put together, you know.
That's for another episode. We'll talk about the Reserve.
That's and people need to understand that and jump down that rabbit hole. You know, it was interesting being with that group. I just thought it wasn't for me. I wanted a small mom and pop kind of operation. And what wound up happening is I was just going to open up a small office, me and my ex-wife, do one or two deals a month and just live. You know, my thing was time. Time was a big thing for me. Ever since I read Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad book back in, I think, 2001.
Everybody should read that. Hello. And you
it'll
should
make you the worst
with your kids.
It will make you the worst employee ever because that's what it did to me.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Time to grow.
That's where it all kicked off back then. But I kind of really, the executives approached me and they said, hey, you know, we know you're opening up an office and we're trying to, you know, grow in this territory. we'll make it super easy for you to franchise. And I said, okay. I jumped on a plane. I went to Arizona. I met with them. They told me what the plan was, and they've held true to their word. And so here we are almost 7 years later, and we were injected in an area where we have competitors right down the road from me, and they've been entrenched here for 30 plus years, but we have a different way of doing it. I pull on my background of marketing and online marketing and digital marketing, which none of them could understand. And that's how we've grown the business, and we've become the top agency in town because of that.
But also because of your mindset, because your mindset is that of abundance, which says that there's enough out there for different perspectives and different plans and different client bases. And that's huge. And more agents need to have that mindset of, hey, there's a space for me.
Yeah, I think there's too many. I don't do any of the typical, like, you know, for sale by owners. I don't chase expireds. I do more what they call pull marketing. I put the content out there and people come after me, kind of like what you do. Exactly what you do. And you do a very, very well tight job of it as well. I've never seen somebody produce their podcast or their YouTube channels like you do. I mean, you have follow up and everything. It's great. Really good.
I also am surrounded by amazing people, which is one of the secrets of success, is don't have to do everything yourself. Surround yourself.
True. Very true. Same thing we do here. On my team, I have about 14 agents. You know, I'm with them every day. I handhold. I guide them through what they need to do. You know, I got some offices around me that have 250 agents. But the biggest complaint is that they don't ever get to speak to the broker. You know, that's really it.
Okay, so I'm just going to go ahead and lay this out there that this is part one of the Matthew Defeaty podcast episode. We're going to come back and record a part two. And we're going to talk about the reserve, and we'll talk about some other big picture things. Yeah. You will come back on the show.
Absolutely.
I think our listeners will enjoy that, because I know that this was a completely different version of my show than usual, friends, but I know that you enjoyed it as much as I did, because we got this multifaceted viewpoint, which is why I love real estate, and it's why I love the people in real estate. So, Matthew, if somebody's in the New Jersey market, they're a realtor that wants to talk to you, or they're a consumer that wants to talk to you, what's the best place for them to find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Nutley NJ Realtor. They can find me in my office. Just Google Realty Executives Nutley, and you're going to find us. That's it.
There you go, friends. And I'll have all of his contact information in the show notes for this episode. And you should probably go ahead and hit the subscribe button and 5 stars at the time if you want to, because you should. And that way you'll be alerted when part two comes out. Matthew, thank you for coming on the show and for giving me a warm and fuzzy about your family's history in real estate, because I love success stories that are based on hard work. And that's exactly what you and your family are.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I will absolutely come on the second part if you want.
Perfect. I'll have Michelle reach out and we'll see you next time.
You got it. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or well, you just need to one-up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you have some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.